Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! I shoot flamingos in a fruit fight!
There goes the Daverhood. Welcome, everybody, to the 193rd edition of Dave's Gone By with me, Dave Lefkowitz, and...
me, Jeff Goodman. And Dave, I have the answer to our question.
Already?
Yes.
All right. Now, remember, I'm skipping a week in November, so...
okay. Well, if you didn't skip a week in November, your 200th show would have been on December 10th.
Aha, but...
so you can actually skip three shows instead of December.
December, okay.
So your 200th show will be December 17th.
What? Cool.
Unless you want to skip another show and have a Christmas Eve.
Well, I don't care about Christmas, but maybe when's Hanukkah, do you know?
Hanukkah's late, because remember the Jewish holidays were late this year.
You know, there was a rabbi who... that
don't tell us about the one who was with the priest with cancer. Sorry, I have cancer and it's Christmas.
I'm not in the Christmas spirit. I'm having things cut out of me. No, this is a totally different rabbi. But he was asked, is Christmas... he said, well, is it early this year, Hanukkah, or is it late this year? Or with Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, is it early or is it late? And he says, no, never. It's always exactly when it should be. Because it's on a lunar, different Hebrew kind of a calendar.
Where we have leap month.
But still, come on. If you get... Yom Kippur in the first week of November. That's late. I'm sorry, you know. It's like a woman. If it doesn't come within about 29 days, it's late. It's not when it should be.
I have news for you. If she doesn't come within 29 minutes. I don't know what did I eat today?
That's like my joke.
It was the pancakes.
I think, yes, they were delicious, by the way.
Lovely future sponsor, House of Pancakes Pancakes.
That would be nice. Well, you know the owner, for Christ's sake.
Well, I know the manager.
Oh, the manager? Well, is that not the same as the owner?
We'll have to talk to them about that.
Yeah, we need more sponsors, although we love the sponsors we have for Dave's Gone By. And who are they, Jeff Goodman?
Is it Pam? No.
Well, but Pam is our biggest fan.
I had to give a shout out to Pam. I want Pam to be in Dave's Gone By history. So, Pam, you are now mentioned in the first 10 minutes of show 193.
Thank you, Pam.
And I'm actually going to make sure we mention you on show 200, which will be echoing throughout the country through the entire 2007 year.
It's going to be a big deal. It's going to be bigger than the 1976 Bicentennial. It's going to be bigger than the 2008 election.
You thought the Mary Tyler Moore show finale was big.
Hold on.
We're all going to huddle and cry. And we're going to get Ted Baxter back from the dead.
I think the WGB management will get together and cry. What we put on the air.
There went the neighborhood.
This was the time when this was a real radio station.
And we used to be on a highway that wasn't the sunrise. Actually, they used to be right close to the highway that's the sunrise.
Oh, yeah. Well, they used to be across the street. Now, well, actually, Sunrise Highway is only a block or two from here. Literally, you just make a right turn and there they are.
In Merrick, it was closer.
Well, you could visually see it, but it's, I think, physically the same distance.
There went the neighborhood.
Oh, well, anyway. Hewlett Minuteman Press, the copy kings of Broadway, wonderful sponsor of ours.
Lovely people, from the very beginning.
And if you go into Hewlett Minuteman Press, 10% off your order of copying, printing, binding, all that kind of stuff.
And I'm sorry, Pam, it's much cheaper than doing copies of the library.
Not sorry at all. Go to Hewlett Minuteman Press. And also, mortgages.
But don't let those books be late, because they're expensive. And especially,
the books are only 10 cents for the damn DVDs, man. And CDs are only 10 cents, which is good. But if you take out a DVD and you're one day late, I don't think a library should be charging you a dollar.
What did Blockbuster charge?
It's Blockbuster. That's a commercial business. It's not a local center of education and that our exorbitant taxes are paying for to begin with. Anyway, that was for the pre-show. We've got to get into other stuff here. And I want to leave some time also at the end of the show for... after our guest, because there's some stuff to do.
Okay.
But, want to mention MortgagesRock.com.
I was just going to ask you about Mortgages Rock. Where do mortgages really rock?
They rock at MortgagesRock.com, where not only can you get mortgages, but the point is you learn how to do the whole mortgage system.
It's a very interesting site.
It is. It tells you everything you need to know.
Would that be at MortgagesRock.com?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, indeed. Where making money never sounded so good. And our other sponsor, Performing Arts Insider, Theater Magazine, the Bible of Broadway.
Oh. Come on along and subscribe to the Bible of Broadway.
Yeah. PerformingArtsInsider.com, the place to find out more about that. And one other recent sponsor. It rhymes with Dancing Ansi.
Oh! Fancy Schmancy. I forgot.
Yeah.
Oh, my business?
Yeah,
what, are you kidding?
Yeah. Give us the business, Jeff.
Fancy Schmancy balloons for your decorating needs.
It's cool. Balloons and centerpieces for sweet
theme parties, whatever.
Yeah.
If it's not living, we'll use it to decorate your party with. If you can't eat it and it's not living, we just don't do flowers, folks.
No, no flowers, but everything, the balloons and these beautiful things. Human bones. You know those missing bones from those cemeteries?
Don't tell the people.
I loved your bone archways. They were so cool. You spray painted them orange.
The human arch.
And then you use the ligaments for the contours. It's wonderful. What's your phone number for people who want to fancy-schmancy?
I have skeevies now.
Well, quickly, skeevies.
It's 516-797-3229.
What was that again?
516-797-3229. And you sound so interested about that. What was that again?
Well, you know, people want to
call. Come on, tell me what the number is.
Hey, in the pre-show, we gave out our phone number. You didn't expect anybody. So I called. She didn't want the bear. Oh, it's not a bear. It's a monkey. You were going to give away a monkey, so we won't. Nobody wanted.
No, I'm going to send it to Pam anyway at the library.
Oh, that's sweet. That's sweet.
I'm going to make you deliver it to her.
Oh, there you go.
We'll come a bear.
Would you like to touch my monkey?
My monkey. There you go.
Anywho, before my wife starts tuning out this program, let me remind you that my name is Dave Lefkowitz. I've been here since October of 2002 doing Dave's Gone By with some wonderful guests. We have another one tonight. He's got amazing stories about his life doing musical theater. He's producing a show now at Birdland called Her Song, which is... it's a review of women doing songs written by women and made famous by women all the way from the 1920s through now. So everything from Billie Holiday to Joni Mitchell and everything in between.
What happened to the turn of the century women?
I'm not sure if he went back that far. Dorothy Fields, I think, is the first one that he really connected with. And you find out all sorts of things that she writes. It's a pretty nice show. And he was also the head of the Manhattan Association of Cabarets and Clubs, who do the Mac Awards. And he was head of lyrics and lyricists at the 92nd Street Y for
a
bunch of
years. Interesting program.
Yeah. So, I mean, they get these famous theater people on and ask them, and then people perform their songs. Really cool. And I'm sure he has some amazing anecdotes to tell. So please, everybody, stick around for Dave's Gone By. Got a little bit of business to do, and then we will be back with Barry Levitt.
And Mucho Entertainment.
Right after this. Okay, so your business proposal has been typed, proofread, photoshopped, and given a nice cover. Now, all you need is 20 spiral-bound copies plus 1,000 printings of your latest brochure. Your Xerox can't do it. Your mailroom can't do it. Hewlett Minuteman Press can do it all. Your one-stop printing shop, Minuteman, 1315 Broadway in Hewlett. Open 6 days a week, 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners. Family-owned Minuteman, their service can't be duplicated. Well, rockin' my mortgage in the bosom of Abraham, rockin' my mortgage in the bosom of Abraham, rockin' my mortgage in the bosom of Abraham, mortgagesrock.com. God has a plan for you, giving your friends and family mortgage loans. Learn how at mortgagesrock.com. Fully licensed in New York State and in heaven. They'll teach you the ropes so you can climb Jacob's ladder to high, high, high commissions. Rockin' my mortgage, mortgagesrock.com. Rockin' my mortgage, mortgagesrock.com. Rockin' my mortgage, mortgagesrock.com. Everybody point and click.
Hi, this is Barry Levitt, jazz pianist and producer on Dave's Gone By on WGBB.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By, and we're getting musical on this particular edition of the radio show, and talking to someone who I'm really excited to talk to because he's dealt with legends, and he's also been in the music world and in the Broadway and theater music world for good 20 or 30 years now. And of course, that's the world that I love and that I care so much about. And this is a person who has conducted and arranged things on Broadway in cabaret situations. He's also been the head, briefly, of an organization devoted two cabaret performers. He's also a jazz pianist, and he's kind of getting back seriously into that. And so we've got a lot of stuff to talk about with Barry Levitt. Hello, Barry. Welcome to the neighborhood.
Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
And one of the reasons also that you're here is you're not only playing piano and directing, but kind of producing a show in a... It's sort of a mix of cabaret and revue off-Broadway-ish, but it's in Birdland, which is a jazz cabaret venue.
Right.
What's the show?
The show is Her Song. It's a salute to the great women songwriters from the early part of the century right up to present day. And every song in the show was written either in whole or part by a woman. It's performed by a cast of...
performed in essentially by a whole. No, I'm kidding. I don't know what that means.
performed by a cast of marvelously talented four young women who sing up a storm, and Birdland is located at 315 West
44th. Yeah, get the plug in. It's like 8th Avenue and 44th, right?
8th and between 8th and 9th on 44th. Full service menu, wonderful food.
Yeah, the food looked really good.
Yeah, terrific food. And we're running Saturdays and Sundays at 5:30.
And it's a very enjoyable show. Again, the women come out and they sing songs from all different periods, up from like Billie Holiday and Bessie Smith era blues to the 60s. So what are some of the songs in the show?
Well, a lot of these songs that were written by women, most people know the songs, but they have no idea who wrote them. I mean, that's true of male composers and lyricists as well. But, for instance, the wonderful Billie Holiday song, God Bless the Child, very few people realize that Billie wrote the song.
No, I had no idea. Yeah.
Exactly.
Did she write Strange Fruit, too, or
no,
did she just
didn't.
Put that to another
No, oddly, that was a Jewish school teacher from the South.
Figures.
Whose name I can't recall right now.
Moish.
Something like that. Billie wrote that. She also wrote her other...
Actually, when he was writing Strange Fruit, it was really about etrogs. And they took it in a totally different way.
Just in time for suckers.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. So, and some of the other tunes that are in her song.
Okay, for example... on the patriotic side, on everybody knows that Irving Berlin wrote God Bless America.
Mm-hmm.
This is very well
known. And God Help Us, White Christmas. I don't
and
know.
It takes
a
Jew to write White
Christmas,
Christmas and Easter Parade.
Right.
But nobody that I've ever encountered outside of the business or a select circle of people who know and care about these things, nobody's aware that Catherine Lee Bates wrote America the Beautiful, which is the other big patriotic song.
No, we're not talking about Kathy Bates, the fat
not
actress.
Catherine Lee Bates.
Vertically challenged, I'm sorry. Horizontally challenged, yeah.
Predates Kathy Bates by about 70 years.
So, yeah, and that was a surprise to me. Some of the other tunes in the show, I was like, oh, I had no clue.
Sure.
And Dorothy Fields.
Of course, everybody knows. Well, not everybody.
No, not really. I mean...
But her songs are very well known to the general
such
public.
As?
Such as On the Sunny Side of the Street, I Can't Give You Anything But Love.
She was the lyricist for these,
yep.
And she was working with Kern and some other folks.
Worked with some of the great composers, with Kern, with Jimmy McHugh, and late in her career with Cy Coleman, and wrote Sweet Charity.
Wow, okay, cool.
From Whence Comes Where Am I Going, which we perform in the show.
So let's jump to that immediately, because you're mentioning some of the major influences and composers for theater and of our time, for even the pop era.
Sure.
Who are some that you've been in contact with, worked with, got a chance to observe?
Well, one of the great opportunities that came my way over the course of my career was to be involved with the Lyrics and Lyricists program at the 92nd Street Y. I was artistic director there from 98 through 2003, but before that, I had the great pleasure of working with my friend and mentor, Maurice Levine, as a music director for those programs.
He founded that series, right?
He founded
the 92nd Street Y.
Yep. And he ran it until his death in 98. And
actually, he ran it for a year after his death, too. That was really amazing.
It was strange how he did that, but...
Yeah.
Only Maurice could do that, I'll tell you. If you knew him, it wouldn't surprise anybody. But Maurice was, as I said, a friend and a mentor, and I had 17 years working with Maurice there on the program. So as a result, I met a few of the great legendary songwriters and lyricists.
Such as?
Leo Robin,
mm-hmm.
Who wrote Beyond the Blue Horizon. Oh, gee, let me not get this wrong.
Well, that's a song. Was that a show?
He wrote the lyrics. Oh, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes with Julie Stein.
Ah,
he was
cool.
the lyricist on that. And Leo also wrote many, many wonderful songs for the movies with Ralph Ranger.
Okay. So he showed up at a might as well tell people what Lyrics and Lyricists is. We're maybe jumping the gun a little bit.
It was a lecture, a performance series at the 92nd Street Y, which was originally started to bring attention to one of the great unknown quantities in American popular music, the guys who wrote the words. Mm. That's how they started, and when Maurice started the series, he had the living, breathing lyricists on that stage. The very first season, he had Dorothy Fields on that stage.
Right.
He had Alan J. Lerner on that stage, and getting back to my first involvement, Leo Robin was there. He sang Thanks for the Memory, which he wrote the lyrics to. It was my great, great pleasure to play the piano for Leo Robin as he sang that song. And we had a couple of people who could sing a little bit in that cast. We had Julius LaRosa, Margaret Whiting, and Marlene Verplank.
Mm-hmm.
And we just sat around and sang Leo Robin tunes all afternoon.
I believe it.
And
yeah,
it was incredible.
You use lyrics and lyricists in the past tense. Have they stopped it?
They haven't stopped it, but I'm no longer involved with the series. And now that you've brought the subject up, I think they've strayed from the original intention.
So now it's more of a review cabaret thing, or what?
Well,
or are there no longer that many great lyricists to interview from the era when we care?
Unfortunately, there's hardly anybody left. All the great ones are gone. You know,
well, except Stephen.
Stephen and both Sondheim and Schwartz. They're still very much alive. Stephen Sondheim did do one appearance on Lyrics and Lyricists in the about 74, somewhere around there. But as far as who's left today, I mean, there's still some fine lyricists. Zippel.
If you want to talk to some of the modern ones, sure, they'd love to be.
Craig Cornelia is a wonderful writer.
Is it Clarity or Ahrens?
Ahrens.
But again, why do you think that currently Lyrics and Lyricists has strayed somewhat from the charter, the mandate?
Well,
Or woman date, if you're straight.
In the developmental years, in the heyday of Lyrics and Lyricists, and without sounding immodest, through my tenure as artistic director...
I'll blow your own horn.
I'm not shy about doing that.
Well, if your neck is flexible enough. Yeah.
It is. Look, I've worked too hard and too long to be shy about it. There was one central direction. As with the symphony orchestra, it's... You may have guest conductors, but it's one music director who oversees the overall programming, the overall thematic development of the season, and that is that kind of direction comes best from one central figure. Not that you don't have advice and people you work with, but it still should have one central focus, and they've decided to abandon that. They don't have an artistic director. They have five different artistic directors for each series. So, accordingly, the series has no focus whatsoever.
Yeah.
It's a show. Some of them are very good, and some of them are not so good.
So you still go to them? You still?
I have my spies who attend these
things. Oh, man. But you only mentioned Leo Robin. Okay,
yeah.
Who were some of the others during 1998 to 2004? Unless you want to reach back into when you were just music director for it. I mean,
Arthur Schwartz managed to make an appearance.
Okay.
During my tenure as artistic director, most of the great ones were gone by then.
Right.
So,
but when you were a music director, I mean, you were there in the room. What were the stories that some of the greats were telling?
I can't tell them on air.
You can.
A lot of the backstories.
Yeah.
First of all, just as a general kind of feel for who these guys were, you know, people like Julie Stein and even, you know, Richard Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Yes.
The one through line that I observed over the years was these were tough guys. They like gangsters or anything like that, but they were hard guys. They didn't take any guff. They had to be because the generations that they came up in, the producers that they worked with, you know, they had to be on their guard, and they had to protect their business interests, and they also had to protect their music.
Right.
So they had a tough edge to them. Richard Rodgers was a very, very tough businessman. Very tough. But I think he was right to do that. But you know, Julie, he was, you know, he was a hard nosed toughie. Sammy Kahn, all that whole generation of songwriters.
And of the folks that you invited in when you were the head of lyrics and lyricists, who was your favorite?
Well, you know, just as far as, you know, people and performers, I mean, Julie Wilson always ranks very high on the list. You know, there's not a finer person in the business. She's a class act. She's a very, very supportive person, a wonderfully giving person, and she always delivers on stage.
Yeah. I mean, I've never seen her be anything but really... I mean, when I'm sitting next to her in a cabaret thing, she's just a wonderful lady.
Julie's the kind of person that... I played for Julie in 1973 at the long-departed Persian Room of the Plaza Hotel.
Oh, wow. Now it's called the Iraq Room, and nobody goes.
Now it's right now, unfortunately, it's the Nothing Room. It doesn't exist. I was by there the other day, and they're tearing the plaza up and, you know, making it into something that none of us will recognize. But so I worked with her about 73, 74. I did some dates with her. And then a long stretch of time went by, and maybe 12 or 15 years went by before I saw Julie. Mm-hmm. And I bump into her, and she comes over to me, and she says, without missing a beat, she says, "Hi, Barry, how are you? And how's your lovely wife, Brenda?"
Shoot.
You know, and that's Julie. That's Julie.
That's wonderful. All right, that's a lovely story. That's a happy kind of story. Uh-huh. Now let's talk about your years, or year, or however long it was, as head of the Manhattan Association of Cabarets and Clubs. We're here with Barry Levitt, by the way, who is the pianist, conductor, composer, well, not composer, but director and producer of Her Song. But you were the head of MAC, is what they were called, for when and how long and what happened?
My involvement with MAC started when I was approached to produce the MAC Awards show by the then president, Michael Ostwanek. And I did so for a couple of years. I wound up getting involved in the organization. I joined the board. The elections came up for the president, and I got elected president of MAC. My tenure was one term, 2 years. I joined the organization because I felt it was one way of starting to give back to a business that's been very good to me. I wanted to see what I could do to help raise the profile of the organization, to help raise the profile of live performers, every live performer in the world.
Sure.
Because goodness knows it's a tough, tough, tough road. And I felt that was one way I could do it. I vowed that I would never get involved in anything that resembled MAC bashing, and I still
won't. Well, certainly not as president, but...
No, but even as ex-president, I'm no longer on the board. I'm no longer involved with the organization. But there's, you know, there are structural problems and a perception problem with the organization. There's a membership that is, sad to say, not as active as I think they could be. Everything is pro bono with MAC. Nobody gets paid. You know, people volunteer their time and their talents to do what is a very difficult and more often than not thankless job.
Promoting New York cabaret?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I understand it's difficult.
It's a pretty ethereal notion to begin with. I mean, you know, because more often than not, I'm asked by people all the time, well, what is cabaret? And I can't tell them. By my definition, cabaret does not exist as an art form. Cabaret is a location.
Hmm.
It's a venue. Within those four walls that are cabaret, many things happen. You can see a wonderful jazz performance. You can see a wonderful country western performance. You can see people doing original material. You can see people doing rock and roll. Shall I go on?
Well, it's like the duplex. And
And it's a wide range of activities and different types of shows and different talents that are put on display within those four walls.
Okay.
So, in all fairness to everybody, you can't lump everybody together and say they're a cabaret performer.
All right.
But
you have to in the context of the MAC Award. The Oscars, you've got to do short subjects and animation and features.
And we do. We do. There are many different categories within the MAC Awards and within all of that.
So, but I'm trying to get at the fact of why it was such a... You seem like those 2 years were not fun.
They weren't. They weren't.
So dish. You don't have to bash, but you do have to dish.
Okay. Let me get to certain specific things that happen within any subgroup.
Okay.
Any niche-oriented organization, because it's something I said on my very first night as president of the organization. We're small. We're powerless. If we don't work together, we have nothing. We have absolutely nothing, just as a goal to try to get people motivated and interested. But yet, what the constituency of the organization seems to be are very separate, disparate, singular fields of interest and endeavor.
Okay.
That have not yet come to grips with the fact that there's a larger picture at stake here other than one's own individual performance.
Okay.
You know, that has to be the overriding truth of the organization.
So who are some of the people you hate? You can just give me the initials.
I don't hate anybody. I haven't got time for that in my life.
Ooh,
I'm
nice.
Disappointed with certain people.
Give me some initials. We won't, you can bash them, but anonymously.
Let me start at the top. And I won't give you initials. I'll give you a full name. How about George Bush? He's responsible for everything that's wrong with Mac.
At least it's not Clinton. At least they're not a Fox journalist blaming Clinton for it. Yeah.
I won't take a back step on my politics. I'm a Clinton boy.
It was
boy.
Bill Clinton not allocating enough money for cabaret venues.
That's exactly right. And he should because he's a saxophone player.
Right. The Rainbow Room. His Rainbow Stars closed
that's,
because Bill Clinton had, you know, the
that they could have pulled
counter.
Some money from somewhere.
But a little lower down towards in the cabaret field. Who's, like... Who you look at and go, like, oh, they could have done so much, and they were just like,
Dave, you're pulling for something here. I'm not going to give it to you.
Okay. Well, you said before we go on the edit, you kind of were, and then you were, you're pulling back.
No, point well taken. You're absolutely right. But there are certain people out there, you know, if anybody in the world of Mac is listening to this, you know, they know where the battle lines were drawn and amongst whom they were drawn. My position is very simple. It's a colossal waste of time. It's absolutely counterproductive to getting any meaningful work done to further cabaret, to further the notion that there is such a thing as cabaret, the bashing that's going on, and there's a whole subculture that has developed that I choose not to be part of, and that's these internet chat boards where... I did make one statement that I sent in a letter to a reviewer, David Finkel.
Theatermania, right? Or
One of those. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
In which I pointed out that, you know, I felt he was getting some of his information from chat boards. I felt that was not the best source of reliable information. That, quite frankly, a lot of what I had seen recently on chat boards far more resembled a typical everyday New York occurrence when you're walking down the street and you encounter somebody railing at the gods and ranting and raving to no one in particular for whatever
reason.
That's
probably me.
Well, it could be me too, but the point is that if you're walking down the street, you don't stop and engage this person in meaningful conversation or dialogue because that's just not going to happen.
Right, okay.
So the point is that better to come to the various sources, better to, even if you feel the need to be confrontational about what you have to say to that person, to at least make the statement, establish the dialogue, and accomplish something.
Okay.
Because as far as I'm concerned, if you're criticizing me on a chat board, you have not communicated to me. If you want to criticize me,
ask
me a question, write me a letter. My phone is a matter of public record.
What's your phone number, Barry?
917-853-5171.
Everybody, call now.
Call now, but it's off, so. And we'll stay off for a while. Did I just do something stupid?
Oh, definitely. With my audience, are you kidding?
Good.
You're going to start getting pizzas.
Fine.
No,
you'll
have to pay for them.
no problem. I'm flush for at least another couple of days. So.
Oh, well, we're not going to flush you yet from the program. Barry Levitt, you're on Dave's Gone By. Thank you so much. I want to ask you some more questions about other folks that you've worked with, especially as a music director and conductor, and a little bit more about Her Song, which is the show that you're working on and producing. But first, we've got to do a little business. So we'll be back with Barry Levitt on Dave's Gone By right after this. Did you know that I, Dave, am not just a fantastic radio personality? I'm also a playwright, and my book, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, is filled with the same humor I bring to Dave's Gone By every week. Funny, sad, true. Makes a great gift, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, only $20 hardcover, $12 trade paperback. To get your copy, call call 516-295-1511 or email davesgoneby@aol.com. What's playing on Broadway? I'll tell you what's playing on Broadway, and I'll do it by checking Performing Arts Insider. Off-Broadway, off-off-Broadway, off-off-off-Broadway. You keep adding offs, they'll keep adding listings. Who's in the cast? What's it about? Why is it special? Performing Arts Insider is Broadway the best way. 516-295-1511. 516-295-1511, or see PerformingArtsInsider.com. I love internet radio. You can surf stations and music for free and listen anytime on your computer. And I love Live365.com for playing vintage episodes of Dave's Gone By Saturday nights at 11. And I love the comedy channel they're on, DFSX Radio. But those letters, DFSX, who can remember that? Good thing you don't have to. Just go to davesgoneby.org and click the link, Saturday nights at 11. Spread the radio love.
Hi, this is Barry Levitt, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB 1240 AM.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By and the world of music and cabaret and theater, which is a world that I love pretty much more than anything, and so apparently does Barry Levitt, my guest in the neighborhood. Barry, as we said before, he was president of Manhattan Association of Cabaret and Clubs for a while. He was also the head of lyrics and lyricists for a few years. But he's done other stuff all the way up to Broadway. You were involved both musically on a couple of Broadway shows, including Catskills on Broadway.
Best job I ever had in my life.
Because?
I wound up doing that show working with comedians that I had worked with when I was first starting out in the business.
Wow.
In the late 60s and early 70s, Freddie Roman, who was...
I get the feeling he's a tough bird.
Freddie is a tough guy and a wonderful guy.
Oh, good.
Oh,
good.
No, believe me, a mensch of the first degree.
Lovely.
The dean of the Friars, I believe.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and... no, Fred, great, great guy. Tough businessman, but you have to be.
You got it. Yeah, yeah. Sure. And yeah. Catskills was a wonderful show. I mean, it was the four comedians, Dick Capri.
Yeah.
Who was the
Mousy Lawrence.
Mousy was hysterical.
Hysterical. That man has been making me laugh for 35 years.
Yeah.
All of them.
And was Marilyn Michaels was the
Marilyn
point.
Michaels started the show, which is the reason I was involved. I've been conducting for Marilyn since the 70s. An old pal, a dear friend, and
a good comedian, and the voices.
Well, you know
the,
what? She's,
impersonations too,
she's really made her mark as an impressionist and comedian, right. But she is a hell of a singer. She is a terrific singer. And that's another thing that a lot of people forget. She was in Funny Girl. She did the first national company of Funny Girl. They could have had anybody, and they had Marilyn, and they chose Marilyn to take that out on tour.
Yeah. Actually, also, I want to get to some of the folks that you've worked with.
Yeah.
You know, I guess as a music director or conductor.
Music director, conductor, Peter.
Here's a list of people. Bernadette Peters.
Yep.
Eartha Kitt.
Yep.
Rosemary Clooney. Tell me something about each of them.
Bernadette was only a couple of concerts, and it was an absolutely wonderful musical experience. She's a really, really fine artist, a wonderful singer. I can't say that I know her,
sure.
But she couldn't have been more pleasant or more appreciative to her entire group of musicians. Rosie Clooney
She's dead. You can say bad things about her.
No, nothing bad. She's, again, a great singer, a great performer.
Yeah. I mean, she had her problems. I mean,
hard person to get to know, very guarded.
Okay.
I'd have to say, and a little bit edgy, a little bit difficult.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. That's the first nasty thing you've. Yeah.
Well, you know,
not like I'm looking for dirt, but it adds a little spice.
You know, Eartha Kitt is an amazing performer, and but you never know which Eartha you're going to encounter.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah. So
night to night?
Minute to minute.
Wow.
Yeah.
But what do you do then when you're dealing with that? You just stay clear? You weren't the director. You were the music director.
Being the music director for these people is your combination of a father figure, pianist, psychiatrist, playmate, friends. But, you have to really keep control of the situation, of the musical situation.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's difficult and sometimes not.
So at certain points, I mean, you want to massage, they're the star. I mean,
yeah.
You wouldn't be there if not for them. But
exactly.
At the same time, are there points when you say, I'm not going to take this?
Well, you know, yeah. In the early part of my career, I really kept very silent about that kind of stuff because you're always worried about protecting the job. But as I got older and crankier, I just said, wait a minute, you know. I have my boundaries too. You know,
and then I'll bet they apologize. They got, you know, better quickly.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Well, you know, they have any relationship like that has to be based on respect.
Now, there's only one enemy of this program. It's sort of working back, and Beck knows this. Beck is the publicist, and I thank him very much for bringing Barry Levitt to the show. He's publicist for Her Song, which is the show that you're directing and
producing. He's doing a tremendous job, Beck. Thank you.
But the Mandy Patinkin is the only enemy of this program that I know of.
Wait a minute. Did Beck tell you to talk to me about Mandy?
No, but it occurred to me, because most of the people listed on your bio that you are women,
yeah.
It just occurred to me that there's more than women singers. Have you ever worked with Mandy? And if you did, I want to hear the worst.
Okay, I've never worked with Mandy, but, you know, I'm not a fan. That's all I can say. I'm just not a fan.
Just artistically, then, not even personality-wise.
Well, I went to see Wild Party, and I was sitting in the 10th row, and I was spit on, so what can I say? I said, man, you got to go some to spit that far.
Ooh, lordy.
But, you know, which is indicative of his performance style, I would have to say.
All right. Getting snarky here. I like it. Anything you say bad about Mandy Patinkin is fine with me.
Well, you know what? I think the odds of me ever working with Mandy are run from slim to none.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a wonderful pianist that he's had for many, many years, who does, and I say more power to him. He's obviously a very patient man. but what can I say? It's a performance style that I'm not fond of.
Were you involved with the off-Broadway, the original version of Little Shop of Horrors?
Yes, I was, yeah.
What was that like?
It was great. It was fun. It was freewheeling. They had just had their first blush of success, and within sight of 6 months, it became apparent that they would have to open a second company.
Mm.
So they took the original company to Los Angeles, and they installed a whole second company in New York that included me as a pianist conductor.
Nice.
And I got to play Ellen Green's last couple of performances, and I got to play... Very few people remember this. The person who took over that part from Ellen Green was Faith Prince.
Wow. Yeah, I can see. I can totally see her doing it.
And it was first big shot in New York, and she was wonderful. And talk about an absolutely thankless job. I mean, taking over an iconic role like that. I mean, because let's face it, Audrey was Ellen.
Yeah. I mean, they even gave her the movie, and that's so rare.
Very rare. But there was nobody else who could possibly play it.
Except Faith Prince, who apparently did a very fine job.
Ellen in the movie and Faith taking over.
Right, exactly.
Brother. Faith did a remarkable job, and what a joy. And we had a little bit of a reunion about a year ago. I did some concerts with her again, and that was a lot of fun because she works with Alex Rybeck, a dear friend and a great pianist. And we did two pianos with Faith, and that was a ball.
Wow.
Yeah.
And other folks that come to mind that you've worked with and dealt with, both positive and negative.
I had a long association with Ben Vereen.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Ben was...
Did we lose him?
No.
Oh, no, he's
very, very much alive. Well,
cool.
He coached Usher for his role
in Chicago.
Yeah, he gave him a lot of the
fun. In fact, he coached all the Ushers, so now they give two playbills.
He's still... He's in the back of the house right now. Anyway... No, Ben's very, very alive and well, and Ben, my association with Ben was one of the finest artistic experiences I ever had in my life.
Wow.
Yeah. He was doing in nightclub and cabaret what was groundbreaking theatrical-type presentations. He was doing characters. He had a segment of the show. I mean, besides the flashy Vegas stuff,
right.
And he did plenty of that, because God knows Ben... could, but within it...
Magic to do.
Yeah. We did all of that. He had a section devoted to Burt Williams.
Oh, wow,
legendary vaudevillian and a star of the Ziegfeld Follies, who was the highest paid entertainer of his time. He was an African American performer who, because of the racial climate at the time, had to work in blackface.
Right.
And Ben did a 15-minute segment on Bert that was unlike anything I've ever seen in a nightclub, and I can honestly tell you that it was emotionally draining for everybody.
Wow.
On that stage.
And what year, this would have been the
77, 78,
yeah,
right after Roots.
Wow.
And it was all I could do to keep it together as I'm conducting, because it was so powerful and so rich and so...
Did he do it in extra blackface, or did he just do it in regular face?
Ben put blackface on and did the whole thing in costume and in character.
Wow.
And it was remarkable, absolutely remarkable.
So now you're doing a new show, a review, and one of the things that mentioned in the press materials is you've produced other things, but this seems to be the first show, quote-unquote,
yeah,
that you've produced.
Yeah, my work as a producer has mostly been... to date, has been involved, corporate parties, events, things like that.
Doesn't that mean just raising money? Isn't that what a producer is, or is it a different context here?
A producer is one of those catch-all phrases. Raising money is certainly a big part of it, but there's an artistic side to it, too. I mean, look, one of the great producers of all time, David Merrick, was very hands-on in terms of what was said and what was performed on that stage. Very hands-on, and if he didn't like something, the authors knew about
right,
it right
yeah.
away. But certainly the biggest part of what Merrick did in his career and his life was raise money. Now, today we don't have producers like that anymore. We have corporate producers, and we have
15 of them on one show.
Yeah. And when I say we don't have producers like that, we don't have ones that are quite that hands-on and quite that intimately involved from the creative side.
Unless you're Ariel Tepper and you're lunging at the young men. But no, I'm kidding.
Now, have you dug something up about me and Ariel?
I worked with her once. She is the one. I hope I'm not mistaking the one, but the one that got into trouble on that show.
Oh, no, that wasn't Ariel.
I'm sorry. Forgive me, Ariel.
No.
Who was it?
I don't remember her name, but...
It was the Snoopy Charlie Brown kind of show. That was a pretty good show, but apparently she was...
I saw a picture of this woman, and I said, wait a minute. What's he complaining about?
She could get a role,
She's quite a tomato.
A tomato? I haven't heard that. How old are you, Barry?
Well, on my next birthday, February 4th, I will hit 6-0.
Any big plans to spend fairly
I just hope to be breathing.
Are you healthy? Are you well?
I am healthy.
Are you squeezing tomato? Do you have a tomato at home?
I do have a tomato. I have a 59-year-old tomato at home. And,
well, a little wrinkly at that point.
Not at all. Not this one.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, no. She's a hot tomato.
Hot tomato. Do you have any little grape tomatoes between you?
I have a gorgeous daughter by the name of Dory, who, by the way, is the choreographer-director of this piece. Her song, which is running at Birdland every Saturday and Sunday at 5:30.
Gotta put it in
315 there. West 44th Street, and a wonderful menu, I might add.
Let me ask you some Michael Regal questions, then.
What about him?
Since you're the producer of
this
thing.
Right.
So, her song is there. What's the capitalization? What does it cost to put four women on the stage in nice costumes with a band in a place like Birdland?
Let me just say this. I won't give you an exact dollar figure.
Of course not, but...
But I will say that in the history of show business, nothing has ever been done cheaper than this. For what we have.
The actresses are paid, though. You got to pay them equity equity.
Oh, yes, they are equity.
So you have to...
At my insistence.
Cool.
I wanted them to be able to participate in the pension fund, and I am very proud to say that we are paying over equity scale.
By the way, you might as well just mention the names of the actresses since
please. They'd kill me if I didn't. And not in alphabetical order, we have Kelly McCormick.
Who is, by the way, married to a rabbi, I think.
Kelly is a Rebbetzin. She is her husband.
McCormick. Figure. And she's cute, too.
And she's gorgeous. Whoa.
All right, more than cute. She's very pretty.
I told her many times. I said, I'm a producer. I'm allowed to say this. You're gorgeous.
If the rabbi ever,
Rabbi's there all the time. A hell of a guy. Wonderful.
Well, I would hope so. Heaven of a guy.
Heck
of a guy.
Smart guy and a jazz fan to boot.
So you got Gabrielle Lee.
Gabrielle Lee's a wonderful, wonderful singer. Trisha Rapier, I mean, they're all wonderful singers.
And is Emma Zacks relation to...
Yes, she is Jerry Zacks' daughter.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And I hired her in spite of that. No, you know, Emma came up to me and she said, you know, she was very open about it. And I, as I was with her, and I told her, I said, you only got this job because you absolutely deserve to be here. It's on talent.
Yeah, that stage doesn't... She would have been happy if her dad got in the job.
Yeah.
Who cares
at
that point?
You know, she's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderfully talented lady.
And again, her song is these women singing songs written by women, or at least half written by women. Sometimes the music.
Sometimes completely.
Right, sometimes completely. Yeah. Everyone from Carol Bayer-Sager to Joni Mitchell. Joni Mitchell's written so many wonderful songs.
Yeah.
Did you have to do Woodstock?
Well,
I mean,
we have to? Yeah.
Okay, because it was so iconic of the...
Well, the thing is that when I re-examined the material and I saw exactly what that lyric was, I said, considering the times that we live in, what's going on in the world today, I said, this is a perfect example of... The song was timely when it was written at the height of the Vietnam situation, and it is absolutely timeless now, because unfortunately the words are truer today than they were when she first wrote them.
Actually, you should probably sneak in Little Boxes, too, by Malvina Reynolds. That'd be a good one, too.
It's a short song, too.
Okay,
Little Boxes. I don't know that one.
Actually, Pete Seeger did it most notably, but there was Malvina Reynolds.
I'll
sing it for you off the air, but it's a classic.
We are always looking for new material. The version that we're doing right now, we're limited in time because of the venue, and we need to do an 80-minute version. But we hope to expand, add more material, new and different things. Let me just say quickly, as far as the musical underpinnings of this show, we are doing some things that are very true to the original performances and idioms that the songs were created in, something like Shine on Harvest Moon, written by a woman. Nora Bays, whose real name, by the way, was Dora Goldberg.
Oh, my God. Well, that was James Joyce's Nora, wasn't it?
I believe so.
Yeah.
No, James Joyce doesn't have any songs in this show, though.
Oh, then, no, he doesn't?
But we're working on
Ulysses, you're my man.
It's a blues, right? That's
just not... I'm walking through Dublin all day.
Anyway, Dave, you're good.
Thank you very much.
What was I saying?
Nothing. Just radio, yeah.
Musical styles. But we do, I took some of this stuff. The version of Woodstock that we do is a completely new vocal arrangement that I've done, and the girls sing the living hell out of. Okay, here's one for you.
Sure.
Elvis Presley.
Yeah.
Elvis Presley's first big, big chart-topping number one hit and the single biggest selling single of his entire career was Heartbreak Hotel.
Which was May Axton, was it?
May Axton.
And let's not forget also that Hound Dog may have been written by a man, but that was a woman's song. That was Big Mama Thornton.
There's great debate. I may offend somebody here with this one. Lieber and Stoller.
Oh, I'm offended. What? No.
Name is on the copyright, but there is certainly much in dispute about the actual creation of that song truly being written by Big Mama Thornton.
Right.
Now, I'll let the lawyers fight that one out. But within what's on the copyright, Big Mama Thornton is credited as a co-writer.
Oh, so actually that could have been a song, too.
There's a case to be made for Hound Dog being written by a woman.
Well, there is a case to be made for people to go see her song at Burtland. It's Friday and Saturday night, you said, right?
No, Saturday and Sunday.
Sorry, Saturday and Sunday evenings. And it's Burtland is, what's the address again?
315 West 44th Street between 8th and 9th.
Now, everybody will get to stare at all these lovely singers, but if you look at the piano, you will see the back of the head... Oh, the man I'm talking to. You never turn around once. But
I can't.
It's a nice trio of a
wonderful
band.
Trio. Cameron Brown on bass, Brian Grice on drums. Two absolutely superb, superb musicians.
Yeah. It's a good show. It's in the right venue, too. It really feels right at Birdland. So, folks, go see her song and tell him Dave sent you. Say hi to the piano player because he's Barry Levitt, and it's been a pleasure to have Barry in the neighborhood. Best of luck. What else are you working on, or is this the main thing in your arsenal right now?
I do a Sunday jazz brunch at Iridium on 51st and Broadway every Sunday from 11 to 3. Come down and see us there. I have a quartet, and I invite people up to sing and sit in with me.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I'll be there. I'll get novelty tunes up the wazoo.
I might add, if you go to Birdland, they'll validate your parking, and it doesn't cost you much. So it's
only a Jew would think.
And the food is good. Not kosher, but it's very good.
Oh, well, you have a salad. Thank you, Barry Levitt.
Thank you, Dave.
30 seconds is a long time. You can say a lot in half a minute about your business, your product to sell, your message. Say it on Dave's Gone By. Easy, inexpensive, effective. For details and the rate card, davesgoneby.org or email davesgoneby@aol.com. Imagine how much you can say to my listeners by advertising on Dave's Gone By. Just like this, 28, 29, 30.
How effective was that?
I thought it was very effective, extremely effective.
Now, Dave, going back to the other commercial, 180 plus, which means show number 200 will be on
December something, possibly the 17th. That seems to be the date that's circling around. Like our 200th episode will be on December 17th, 2006. Going to do something special.
And for everyone who orders five past episodes of Dave's Gone By, you will include a special 200th edition for free, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you order five episodes of Dave's Gone By on CD, they're $11 a piece. That includes all shipping and handling.
And a special bonus 200th edition, which will be more than a regular episode when it goes on for sale.
Well, yeah. It'll include the pre-show, as we've been doing. That's one of the nice things about these recent things. I've started to include some of the pre-show material on the CDs. So you actually get about 70 minutes on a disc.
But we're going to charge more for the 200th edition.
Are we?
Yes.
How much are we going to charge for that?
Well, I think we should charge... How much is one episode?
$11.
So 20 for the 200.
It's not going to be a double episode. I wish it were.
It's going to be really, really good.
Oh, yeah. It'll be fantastic. It will be, and we'll print it on solid
gold.
But
instead of paying $20 for that 200th edition...
Yes.
Then you can buy five other episodes and save $20.
That's actually a really cool idea. So everybody, if you want to know what we've done on the program since October of 2002, go to my website, davesgoneby.org. Click, and you can see a list of literally all the guests, all the sketches, all the songs, week by week by week of what we've done. And you can order any one of those CDs.
But, Dave,
mm-hmm.
They'll all want the recent episodes with me on them.
Well, of course they will. There are quite a few of them. You've been sort of a guest co-host now for about 2 or 3 months. And aside from early appearances as a theater critic on some of our theater segments, I think that's pretty cool.
And don't forget my little remote from Alaska.
Well, that too. That was a couple of
that
weeks
was
ago. That was a good show. I mean, every show you're on is a good show. Every show we do is a good show, I think. They're not all wonderful, but I think they're pretty darn
And you
good.
Know what makes them better?
What?
Amy's listening.
Who?
Pam!
Pam! You've already forgotten her name. Oh, Jeff.
Well, once in love with Amy.
Oh, well, who's Amy? There's no Amy in your life.
Once in love with Amy. It's some song.
I know. Hey, speaking of, before we get to some other stuff, I want to say some thank yous and stuff like that. First of all, happy congratulations to Jamie DeRoy, the cabaret person and hostess who was on our show a couple of years back. She's going to be doing a show called Country Meets Broadway and 95th. With guest star Larry Gatlin and Kathy Breyer, Eric Bergen, Leslie Kritzer, and Devin May. Remember him from the show Bat Boy?
Yes.
Well, that was a good show, actually. And
I loved it.
This is my favorite.
I have the CD, do you?
A Bat Boy? I might. I haven't heard it in a long time. But I think
Save the Bat Boy.
Hold me, Bat Boy.
Touch
me, Bat Boy. Yeah.
Oh, it's so great. Well, because it was kind of a spoof of, like,
oh, no, it was a very, very funny, satirical, spoofy show. But anyway, this show, Country
Meets
Broadway...
And we all know that you don't raise cows on a mountain.
Country Meets Broadway and 95th is going to be, and I love, there's no better theater name in New York than the Leonard Nimoy Thalia Theater at the Peter Norton Symphony Space.
Really?
That's the damn name of the theater.
Beam me up, Scotty.
Beam me up. I'm going to put it on a marquee. The Leonard Nimoy Thalia Theater at the Peter Norton Symphony Space. By the time you said that, the show's over.
Yeah.
I can put you on a ticket.
The Leonard Nimoy. I can't
Thalia.
Thalia.
Well, it used to be called just the
Leonard
Thalia.
Nimoy's new last name is Thalia?
What's what?
Leonard Nimoy's new last name is Thalia?
Yeah, I guess so. Anyway, 2537 Broadway, 95th Street. For more information, go to... It's a good thing they haven't changed the website name. It's just symphonyspace.org. It would be kind of horrible if you had to go to Leonard Nimoy Thalia, symphonyspace95th.org. That'd be funny, actually. Anyway, tickets are $30 or $45. $45 gets you a reception with the whole
crew. Oh, I'd spend the $45.
Yeah.
Do you get to meet Leonard Nimoy?
No, you don't, he's not involved. His name is on the theater. So it's anyway.
But if you're lucky, he'll be there.
Jamie Giroir is hosting that. So, want to just give a plug for that. Want to thank my beloved and wonderful wife, Joyce.
Who we all love.
Made a major stride last week on her dissertation. So,
mazel tov, Joyce.
It's been a long time, but she's got a draft in. People are reading it. Knock wood, knock wood. So that's good. Want to thank our sponsors, Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine, the
Theater Bible.
That's right. MortgagesRock.com, where you
can earn money, and it's a great website.
And Hewlett-Minuteman Press.
The friendliest people in Hewlett, and they charge less than the
library. And Fancy Schmancy Balloons.
I've never heard of that one.
For all your party and decorating needs. Want to remind people to listen to Losing Myself Here Almost Midnight, Indecent Exposure Radio, Saturday, midnight to 6 a.m. on Sundays, on WVOX, 1460 a.m. in New Rochelle, live streaming on WVOX.com. Yes, Jeff?
Oh. And don't forget our special episode next week.
Which is the Halloween episode. Well, yeah, I'll get to that.
Okay.
We have a couple of really cool guests next week. But also want to tell people to listen to Vic Fusco's Swing City Vic, 9 p.m. on WGBB on Sunday nights, and Joyce Keller, Radio Psychic, Wednesday nights at 11. They're both good supporters of this program.
And how about the guys up in Westchester?
We already did them, Indecent Exposure Radio.
Oh, that's right, I'm sorry.
But you can also, if you like my show, like Pam, my biggest fan who loves listening to the program, remember, you can catch a vintage Dave's Gone By episode Thursdays and Saturday nights at 11 on DFSX Radio. All you got to do is go to davesgoneby.org and click on the link. Now, before...
Has Pam ever heard her name on the radio so many times?
No, I assume not.
Pam.
Unless they were talking about Mork and Mindy and Pam Dauber. Remember, what ever happened to Pam Dauber? I don't know, I guess a dog's
she's
her out.
She's probably performing the Leonard Nimoy.
Stanley Smith. She's doing Last of the Red Hot Lovers.
Yeah.
She's sort of at this point.
James Coco.
She was never red hot. She was sort of lukewarm. Now she's like sort of cold-ish. Hey, well, I want to do a little bit of a sad thing here. I'm going to do a farewell.
Oh, that's right.
To Anna Russell, the prima donna of operatic parody. She died October 18th at age 94. Her autobiography was written in 1985, which the title was, I'm Not Making This Up, You Know, which is kind of the thing that she would say, because she would tell the stories of Wagnerian operas, which was so bizarre and ridiculous, and the way that she would go about it and give these whole long tales of these things about rings and fire and storms, and then she'd say, I'm not making this up, you know, and the audience would get excited. Because she and Victor Borga were taking something that was never really meant for fun and injecting some of the humor into this high-toity thing of opera. She was like a self-knowing version of Florence Foster Jenkins. She was born Claudia Anna Russell Brown in Canada. Speaking of Canadians, December 27th, 1911, in her New York Times obituary, they quoted her saying she had wanted to be an opera singer, a real one. But she said, I had no range, no color, but I could sing loud. And it grew louder and louder and awfuler and awfuler. But she knew. Apparently what happened was she was, this is apparently true, she was in a British touring company doing Cavalleria Rusticana. The tenor had given her a shove on stage, as per directed, but she's a large woman. And he fell backwards when he was pushing her. So he fell. Then she tripped, and that was her end of her serious career, because you don't recover from that when they write about that. But by the mid-1940s, Anna Russell was doing concerts that satirized opera and music societies and all these high society ladies, and was doing that, went into semi-retirement in the 1960s, but still came out of retirement to do these concerts all over the world. So we're going to play at the very end of the show.
We still didn't probe more what's going on next week, by the way.
Well, we'll do that. I'm just giving people a farewell to Anna Russell first. What?
Very excited about next week.
I'm glad you are. And we'll explain why if you just let me get through the Anna Russell thing. She's dead. A little Rachmanis, a little piggy. She's lying there. She's maundering. Her bones, in a couple of weeks, she'll actually be down to 115 pounds.
I am actually sorry Pam has to listen to this.
Well, anyway, we will play a clip from her long piece about how to write your own Gilbert and Sullivan operetta. It's a pretty funny thing, so we'll just have a little clip of that as our outro music. But yes, I'll be back next Sunday, October 29th. Are the gospel people here? Can you hear them?
I don't know. I'll check the hallway. Hold on.
Would you mind?
Hold on. It's going to take me hours to work through the...
I spent more time on Anna Russell.
The huge GBB lobby. Hold on.
Okay.
I'll be going down three flights of stairs now.
And I will explain also, while Jeff is doing that, what we'll be doing next week, which will dovetail also with Jeff's birthday, which is coming up. Mazel tov to Jeff. Well, we'll keep it going a little bit. So Jeff, I'll tell you a couple of things about the birthday and Halloween show together. First of all, a group that's been on the program twice, or I should say, well, it's a little complicated. There's a fellow named Soda. That's his name. Soda. And he's a musician. And he was
in
two
bands.
Sorry?
Does he do pop?
It's kind of more sort of post-grungy, folky.
He Soda Pop!
I don't get it. I get that, but... Oh, I get it. Sorry. brain fart after midnight. I just kind of lose it. So, Soda was in one band, and they were on the show. Soda's a really nice guy. He emailed me years ago. He said, I want to be on the show. You sound great, blah, blah, blah. I couldn't resist. And I let him in. He's a nice guy, and a pretty good guest. So then he joined another band, and we had them on, and they were a lot of fun. And the band is called His Mighty Robot. See, I'm confusing it with his first band. His Mighty Robot. They've got a CD coming out. So they're going to stop in for about 10, 15 minutes next week. In person, live in the studio.
I bet you it's because his career is on the downslope. You know why?
Why?
He lost his fizz.
I knew that was coming. But, you know, there's only three members in the band, as opposed to... It's a shame they only have seven up. Now, tell us what else is going to be on next week's...
I don't know what's coming on next week. You're the one who tells me what's going on next week, David. David, how could you leave me like this? David is now... searching through the files to see what next week's guests are going to be. But anyway, next week, I don't want to promo my own thing. I have to tell people, okay, everyone tune in next week because it's my birthday party. It's Jeff's birthday party show.
It will be. We'll do some of that, especially in the pre-show.
I'm just getting older. I'm not even getting better next week.
And let's see, who am I forgetting? Let's see, of course, because it's Halloween. This is a great, cool guest. Now, remember I told you a couple of...
Satan's coming already?
Close. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I went to this radio conference where people pitch their books. They want to get onto radio and television shows.
Mm-hmm.
So all these folks who are from organizations or they've written these books from publishers or they've self-published, they come to this conference. And
okay, so who's coming to the show?
You know, Jeff, I'm also trying to kill a little time here, so we don't have...
I have plenty of stuff to talk about before the gospel people come.
Oh, okay.
But tell us who's coming on the show.
Well, his name is Michael Largo. And the reason, first of all, that he was exciting to me, because of all the people who were pitching stuff that day, all these books that they have. Remember we talked about Fictoids?
Yes. I have the copy in my car. I love it.
170 Reasons Not to Live Next to Your In-Laws, and we talked a little about it. But this was the one guy with the one book, and I was like, wow, I got to have this guy on my show.
So tell me who
is it. And it dovetailed with Halloween. Michael Largo wrote a book called Final Exits, and it's an encyclopedic, but still sort of a little bit off-the-wall humorous look.
About?
Death. It's about the myriad thousands of weird ways that humans have died since pretty much the beginning of time. And it's hard, doesn't sound that much fun, but it's one of those
hilarious. David, it's hilarious.
You can flip through, and I swear, on every page that I've read so far, there's a fact that I was like, "You've got to be kidding."
Has anyone ever sneezed themselves to death? Can you ask them that for me?
I think it's in there. People have laughed themselves to death. People sneeze. People have died in flagrante delicto. People
die
in the weirdest possible ways and committed suicide.
But we're very impressed that after midnight you can say in flagrante
delicto.
Delicto.
Actually, after midnight I can probably say this. not on this station, but on a couple of other stations.
You
I can use a different F word than flagrante, if you know what I'm saying. Delectable flagrante. Oh, is that the doorbell?
No.
How strange.
We can play a little gospel music.
Well, talk to the folks just for one more minute. I'm going to check one other thing.
Oh, wait, you talk. I'll check the door.
I will talk. And check to see if the door is, if they can get in.
Tell them a joke.
A joke. Well, I told the Carson joke. I think I did this in the pre-show. Let's see. Carson opens the envelope. Question is, sis boom ba. And the answer is, what is the sound an exploding sheep makes? Da-dum-da! Thank you very much. Now I've told that joke like 5 times on the air today. It's enough. So how are we doing? Okay, so pick a topic, any topic, Jeff Goodman. Do you want to talk about Madonna and the baby?
Oh, okay.
Did Madonna have a baby?
Well, she's trying to get one in a special Madonna-type way.
I heard she adopted Rodney Allen Rippey. Is that true?
Oh, no, it was I'm going to blow this joke because I don't remember. Arnold, the kid in the lung from Facts of Life.
In the lung?
He's the one, he's had all these medical things, he's a midget, sort of. He always looks perpetually 12 years old. With Conrad Bain.
Oh.
And the dead chick.
Oh, Dana.
What the hell is his name?
He ran for governor of of California.
Yeah, he didn't win.
So he lost to Arnold.
Yeah.
A bigger actor.
They went for 12 of them. What the hell is his name?
Hold on. Please dial 888-8811 if you can think of his name.
Yeah, 631-888-8811. How can I not know this? I mean, I have Google here. I can
all I'm thinking is, you take the good, you take the bad. I'm thinking Facts of Life, and I can't.
No, that's the wrong.
It's from Different Strokes.
Different Strokes, yes. With
The World Don't Move by the beat of Just One Drum, you know.
Oh my. Conrad Bain, Dana Plato.
The phone's ringing.
Maybe calling in. Entertain the people.
It wasn't Conrad Bain. It was the guy from. He was from All My Family or something. But it was, do we have a winner? Oh, someone knows. Pam knows. And Pam is going to tell us, I have to think of who this was. And Dave is running around the studio like crazy. He just cannot believe this. He's like the Flash. It's amazing. And here he comes back.
Guess who's on the phone with us?
Pam?
Yes! she actually stayed with us.
Of course she did.
She stays with us through the whole program. Thank you, my biggest fan, Pam!
Hey,
Pam. And your prettiest fan.
Gary Coleman.
Thank you so much.
Boy, thanks for the joke that we all blanked on, except for Pam.
You sure you don't want that monkey?
I don't want that monkey. Plus, he's a Christmas monkey, so I don't want him.
Take the monkey,
sorry.
Pam.
Wait a minute, you're not Jewish.
I'm not Jewish, but I'm a Christian, but Christmas is like this whole, like, made-up thing that... Whatever!
Whoa! Go all Pam! Right.
It celebrates the birth of monkeys everywhere. Why don't you want the monkey?
I don't want the monkey.
All right, enough with our guerrilla tactics, but you know... thank you so much.
Oh, Daisy got one today. Congratulations.
You got all the good puns today, but I got
one. Well, we're on tomorrow, so that's probably why.
So let's... Pam, if you can stay with us, I know it's kind of late, but...
Hey, Pam, what do you want to talk about?
What is with the gospel people? They're never on time.
No, they're usually early, and they're usually on time, but they graciously give us an extra couple of minutes.
Yeah,
we're very grateful.
Which we're
hoping
we'll
get next week for my birthday party.
Yeah.
Because my birthday is actually Monday, so my birthday party starts when their show does, so they're actually going to give us about, hopefully, 5, maybe 15 minutes. You never know.
Well, let's talk about, they're giving us now, so happy birthday a week early to Jeff. Except I can't say that song because ASCAP holds the right. But anyway.
That's why I wanted to,
by the way, this is AM 1240, WGBB, Freeport.
Why I wanted to wait till you hear, Pam, I'm hoping to get the Indian guy to loan us the happy birthday song because he has the greatest happy birthday song ever.
We have an Indian show all day long. It's Indian music. And then there's an Indian show at 6 o'clock, which is almost more like Muslim than Indian, but they're nice Muslims. There are a couple.
Well, but he just is a nice guy because at the end of the show, he wishes a happy birthday to everyone who writes in.
Do a little song. Sing it.
I forgot it. But it was like the greatest.
Yeah, happy birthday.
It was great.
Do not die. Don't kill a cow.
No, it was really a good song, but it was like so odd because it wasn't the normal happy birthday song. And it'd be great to do it. And Pam, I think we have to keep a list of everyone who calls in their birthday, so we wish them a happy birthday. When is your birthday, Pam?
At the end of August. We have time.
Are you a Cancer?
I'm a Cancer on this radio station, Jeff.
I know.
Well, I'm not into, like, the Zodiac
sign. What are you into? Books.
I'm into books, but I'm more into Jesus.
Ah, well, there you go. Well, it's appropriate.
Because like, you know why, Pam? Jesus loves you.
I know he does. He's awesome. But I don't want to, like, get into this, but cool. the thing is where Christmas is beautiful and it's a great thing, but it's become something that's...
too commercialized. I agree.
Whatever. Anyway,
you're into motorcycles, Jesus, and tantric sex. I'm with you. I'm down for it. Yeah. Well, not the Jesus
part. Next weekend,
part.
I'll be at in upstate at Rome. Well, I'll be upstate in Rome, New York.
Are you going to visit the New York Vatican?
No, I'm not a Catholic. Oh, it's so complicated. I'm a Christian, evangelical Christian.
I know. No, I was making a joke because Vatican was in Rome, Italy, and you were going to Rome, New York. So it's funny. There was a. Wouldn't that be funny though if the head of that little Vatican in Rome, Italy, Rome, New York? See, that was the kind of joke.
Yeah, okay. We're way past that now.
When you have to describe, explain.
I'll be listening on via the internet because I won't be able. You know, I don't know what else. I don't think I'll catch the signal on my little radio, but.
You mean your little AM radio? The transistor radio isn't going to catch it all the way up there?
You have
a powerful signal, Pam. We're all of like 30 or 40 watts.
Why not? It's actually 1,000 watts of power, and if you have mercury fillings in your teeth, we come through that.
Cool.
Like if it's cold in Rome and you're chattering, you'll get us and WBAB at the same time. Like
and
us in one channel and them on the other side of your mouth. What?
I think you have to bite a piece of aluminum foil at the same time and hold the radio.
Either that or wear braces.
Yeah, that's true. So, Pam, let's pick a topic. Let's say, what do you think of this whole Madonna thing? Let's go for something entertainment and whatever.
I don't know. Didn't Angelina Jolie was going to go and do something with, like, this kid and whatever, and then she ended up, like, taking the baby that Angelina wanted?
Oh,
I
haven't heard
like,
about
something...
that.
There was a battle of the babies?
Yes.
Well, battle of the rock star babies. Wouldn't that be great? Remember Battle of the Network Stars years ago?
Yeah, now, it was basically an excuse to look at the female TV stars in bathing suits and, you know, went into cold water.
No, you missed the best one for that. The jiggliest TV that ever was this game show called Beach Clash.
Beach Clash?
Uh-huh. Did you ever see that?
I wanted to read something from a magazine. Can I?
Sure.
Madonna,
go for it, Pat.
Adopting or not? The big question about Madonna's trip to the impoverished African country of Malawi is whether she's there to adopt or not. Malawi officials told the press she was there on October 5th to visit an orphanage and adopt a child that she had asked for a dozen one-year-olds to view and had picked out a boy. So she had a selection. She had the Rwanda.
Like Petco.
That reminds me of an Absolutely Fabulous episode. Have you ever watched that show?
No, I haven't.
Oh, it's really funny. Anyway. She wanted to adopt a Romanian baby, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I'm going to continue with this article.
Mm-hmm.
But her rep, Liz Rosenberg, insisted to the Associated Press, Madonna has not adopted a baby boy. She says Madonna went to Malawi because she's involved in the building of an orphanage/child care center, as well as other initiatives. We'll see, says the article, taken from the reputable Star magazine.
Wow. Well, actually, there was a really cool story, apparently a real one, of this was a couple of weeks ago, where this woman was convicted. She was using her baby as a weapon. She got mad at her boyfriend and started hitting him over the head with her baby. Well, that would be fun if the stars did that.
You know, that's David's idea of hilarious. I think that's kind of awful.
Well, it's both hilarious and awful and messy. Because, you know, baby, there's a certain point until their heads are formed.
I'd still rather talk about Beach Clash.
Well, yeah, I'm talking about Beach Clash.
Let me tell you, because I have to tell you really quickly what this was all about. It was hilarious. What they got is they got, like, all these aspiring models, and they put them in the skimpiest little bathing suits and made them, like, they had one thing where they had to walk across, like, this tightrope, which is, like, padded tightrope that was all wet down.
Yeah.
And the other team would throw, like, balls at them. And they'd get in the, and the whole idea was to get the other person wet. So
the whole idea was to get the audience grabbing its own ball.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
But really, they had two girls and two guys on each team, and they were all from different states. So I think some of these people, like, okay, I stepped foot in Georgia. I'm from Georgia, you know. But they had like the most attractive people on that show.
Was that on network TV?
Yeah, and then they had like each model had like about. I guess it was like a minute or two of, you know, they told it back. It was like a video photo shoot of them, and they were all posing. It was hilarious.
This is.
It was like,
see,
you know,
I'm
you
like,
saw them running down the beach. It was so Jiggle TV. It was hilarious.
If I renew my subscription to the Museum of TV and Broadcasting in New York, they better have that. I'm not going to renew my.
And
business.
By the way, if you also want to currently see a really great Jiggle TV show, sure. Which I'm sure Pam is waiting for, turn to the Spanish channel. I think channel.
Oh, all the Spanish shows.
No. But the best one. Do you ever see Caliente? Where the whole idea is they go to different beaches around the Spanish speaking world, and the girls from the teeniest bikinis you ever saw. Everyone's wearing hardly any clothes.
When is this on?
It's on either Saturday or Sunday. They keep moving around.
In the daytime, right?
Yeah, it's like morning TV. It's caliente. It's like everybody, let's dance with no clothes.
Hot. Speaking of hot. I know the gospel people are kind of hot to get in the room. They're here.
Plus, they're really happy we're talking about Jiggle TV on their
phone. Yeah, right. We have such a clean
Jiggle
show. But anyway, Pam.
Jesus loves Jiggle TV. I'm sorry, I keep interrupting you.
No, it's cool. I'm sorry. I thank you again for calling in, but we've got to go. We've got to get the next show in here. But it's great. Thank you for being such a wonderful fan and a fun guy. I'm glad I got you on the show.
Okay.
And now you can buy your own episode.
Yes. Buy five of them and you get the 200th free. Pam, have a great night. Everybody, ladies and gentlemen, you all have a wonderful night. So I will be back next Sunday, October 22nd, with the spooky.
No, next Sunday is October 29th.
Oh, yes, that's it. I'm sorry. Excuse me. October 29th. With a spooky 194th edition.
Which reminds me of one thing really quickly. On the way here, I was listening. I want you to know, I was listening to, what's the All News Radio? 10
INS or
WINS.
Yeah.
And I swear, one of the things he goes, the calendar may say it's October 22nd, 2006.
Yeah.
2005. But it's really, and he was talking about something else, about what it feels like. And he made a rule. He actually, on INS, they said it was 2005. And I'm going, are you kidding me? They actually.
Well, you know, they shot him. Because you can't get that stuff wrong on WNS. They're very particular.
Because then you lose, you don't win.
They take you out in the back behind the CBS bar. And
so you were only off by a week. He was off
by a whole year. Okay, if I have to say spooky one more time, I'm going to get pissed. The spooky 194th edition of Dave's Gone By.
And how is that edition, what is that edition going to be?
Somewhere before our 200th in December.
No, I just want to say it again.
The 194th.
No, the other words.
Spooky kids, yes. Are we going to keep the gospel people waiting all night? Until
so nice.
Next week.
They're so nice, I can't get over them.
Don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz and
Jeff Goodman.
Good night, love it or leave it or lose it, live it.
And gone by.
Had a very rudimentary education. My success is due entirely to my great determination. Once I nearly went to prison for a shady operation, but I undermined the jury and they changed their tune. I started as a gangster with a power so despotic the police became dogmatic and the going too chaotic that I made a lot of money on a very nice narcotic. I'm that fabulous phenomenon, the great tycoon. It's amazing, there are a lot to say. It's really quite hysterical. It's extra fun to talk about the great tycoon. I was underprivileged when young and suffered from starvation. I decided to be rich so I could eat till satiation. Now my duodenal ulcers reached the point of perforation, and all I get is bismuth and a darn great spoon. I got mixed up in politics and found it quite delectable. I did a lot of chiseling in manners undetectable, but now I'm so conspicuous I'm forced to be respectable. It's really very dull to be a rich tycoon. His political connections have become so widely publicized, it's thought to be respectable, a poor tycoon.